Do you have any questions you want to ask before I begin? I'm serious. If you have questions, I'm happy to try to answer them. Nobody? Okay, maybe there'll be time at the end for some questions. My official topic is Lag Bomer. Okay, is that a good topic? Hope so. I'd like to share with you something very interesting. Everyone knows, I assume everyone in this room knows, the story of Rabbi Akiva's students who died during Sfira. I'd like to, in the first half of the presentation, focus on the terms which the Gemara uses in telling the story. In the second half, the Medrash. The story is found in two different places. I will cite you the source, you can look it up yourselves. So it's Gemara Yevamos, Daf Samach Beis, Amud Beis, where we are taught, I'm giving you an English translation just to save time. 12,000 pairs of Rabbi Akiva's students died because they did not respect one another. Lo nagu kavod zeh bezeh. Now, when did they die? During Sfira. The Meiri says between Pesach and Lag BaOmer. And therefore, at the Meiri, it's customary not to get married during this period of time. Who's going to a wedding on Thursday? Raise your hand. I have one Wednesday night and Thursday. It's a big day. It could be one of the most popular wedding days of the whole year because it comes after a drought, you know? Okay, fine. I have a few questions. One, why does the Gemara use the expression 12,000 pairs of students? A funny expression. Not pairs of socks. You know, you count in ones, who counts in twos? You know, how many students are in the room right now? X number of pairs. That's a funny way to express it. Just count the number of people. Why 12,000 pairs instead of, most people will not tell you that, they'll tell you 24,000 students, everyone knows that. No, that's not what the Gemara says, it says 12,000 pairs. That's question number one. Question number two, how is it possible that the students of this great Torah giant Rabbi Akiva, lo nagu kavod zeh bezeh, had no basic respect for one another? It's hard to believe it. Third question, why was this tragedy singled out for perpetual commemoration during the period of Sfira? There were other tragedies. And finally, how does the custom of not marrying, reflect the tragedy of the Sfira period? Now you may say, oh, but we, not only we don't marry, we won't take a haircut, da 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 da. That's only later. The Meiri says the original custom was only that you didn't get married. How is not getting married somehow relate to this period of time? My suggested answer goes as follows. Rabbi Akiva's students, in fact, did respect one another. The opposite is unthinkable. Basic respect was there. You see, in the olden days, you had no written works, it was Torah Sheba'al Peh in the literal sense. And the custom was that there were study partners who would spend all their time studying together, presumably preparing for the lessons of Rabbi Akiva and reviewing his lessons. It wasn't like today. Today, you go into a Beis Medrash in Yeshiva, so who's your Chavrusa? In the morning it's A, in the afternoon it's B, at night it's C, Shabbos it's D. You know, that's how it is. Very important, I'm not belittling it. But cannot come close to the type of chavrusa that used to exist in the time of Rabbi Akiva. This creates a unique relationship when two individuals join in an all-encompassing and an incessant drive to master the Torah of Hashem. this very special, profound, deep, meaningful relationship should, if understood properly, result in a level of honor for one another which far transcends the basic obligation of honoring a fellow human being, a fellow Jew. Way above and way beyond. Apparently, Rabbi Akiva's students lacked, on their level, lacked this lofty but essential aspect of chavrusa. That's why we understood very well why the number 12,000 pairs was used. Lo nagu kavod ze bezeh did not refer to 23,998 other students in the Beis Medrash. It refers only to the one. Ze bezeh, one and one. There's where the insufficient respect existed. This is such an important lesson that it has to be recounted each and every year during Sfira, which is not only the anniversary of their passing, but is also the lead up to Shavuos. Shavuos is Man Matan Torah Seinu. Man Matan Torah Seinu tells us how critical Torah, the study of Torah, is. If you get it, you understand it, you appreciate it, it should automatically lead to a very, very powerful and high level of kavod, one chavrusa for the other. Just imagine, to make it a little bit more popular, imagine there are two people working on a project, only these two, and their project is to save the world. Save the world. I don't know, they're trying to work on a project to protect Am Yisrael from its mortal foes. Let's say they work on the Iron Dome. Right? I don't know who made up the Iron Dome. I don't know. Somebody made it up there. Let's say there were two people, Reuven and Shimon. And they're, or for that matter, Sarah and Rivka. Okay? They worked together. Maybe it was. I don't know who did it. And they still stay secret. And they worked day and night for years. And they finally got it, and they made the Iron Dome, protecting Am Yisrael from all those scuds and other missiles. Wow! They should have a very high level of respect for one another. What they did, they saved the world, they saved the people. Learning Torah on the highest level, under Rabbi Akiva, is of a similar nature. These people, when they were working together for so long, should have realized the tremendous value of what they're doing, and which would automatically lead them to this high level of respect of Kavod Zeh B'Zeh. Apparently they failed to realize it. They didn't fully appreciate it. Sure, they had some appreciation, but not enough. You know, B'Krov HaYakodesh, we read recently, if you're such a high level, Rabbi Akiva's students, even one little thing, looking up to Rabbi Akiva himself, who was tortured by the Romans and killed, maybe one who knows the some minuscule thing he may have done or said, who knows what, you can't even begin to understand it. Minuscule. B'Krov HaYakodesh, his students are also great, and they lacked a little bit of that level of appreciation of the greatness and importance of Torah, and therefore, as a result, lacked the Kavod Zeh B'Zeh, which I just described. Unfortunately, they perished. And that's why before Shavuos, we have to learn that lesson. Don't undersell, undervalue the importance of Torah study. These people were Hoga Yom HaValayla, and they must have said things along these lines, but they didn't have full appreciation of it. But it would have certainly given them a greater level of kavod, zeh b'zeh. Before we go to the answer the later questions, let us digress for a moment. We read this past Shabbos a very, very important pasuk. Maybe the most important pasuk. Who knows to what I refer? Correct. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. How can that be? Omer Rabbi Akiva. Come on, you sing the song. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. What does that mean? Well, the Chasam Sofer, in his commentary on Chumash, has an additional question. It was a story of two people walking in the desert. There's one canteen. Reuven owns the canteen. There's enough there for Reuven to drink, to survive, to get to civilization. And Shimon will die. Ben Peturah said, split the water. Split the water, they'll likely both die. Too bad. You can't take the water because who are you to cause his death? Rabbi Akiva says, no. Chayecha kod min l'chayecha vercha. It's your water, you drink the water, and someone else dies. It's tragic, but you're not required to give up your life because you have priority. Your life has priority. Here's the Chasam Sofer. This seems to contradict Rabbi Akiva's famous maxim, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, zeh klal gadol b'Torah. This fellow Reuven, who owns the canteen, is not loving Shimon as much as he loves himself. He's keeping the water for himself and not sharing it with Shimon. This is the question. To answer this question, the Chasam Sofer has a unique and innovative interpretation of the word b'Torah. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. I've always translated it. This is a great law in the Torah. Of the Torah. Is that how you also translate it? Yes? Right, that's not how else. You know the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer is an unbelievable statement. It's a great rule concerning the study of Torah. Torah is not something which one may hold in for himself. Torah must be shared with others. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah, concerning the study of Torah. When it comes to physical survival, is one canteen of water, a person's own life has priority. I keep my water. I keep all my possessions. I don't share my possessions with everybody else and have nothing left. Yes, you get stuck, of course. But when it comes to Torah, in the spiritual realm, a person must share his knowledge completely and equally with others. That's what the Chasam Sofer says. Based on that, I'd like to modify it somewhat. Rabbi Akiva is referring to the special spiritual relationship which exists in the context of two chavrusas who studied Torah together all day and most of the night. Omer Rabbi Akiva, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, zeh klal gadol b'Torah. This refers to two people who spend so much time together studying the Torah. You can't be expected to love every Jew as you love yourself. Come on. But your chavrusa? Yes. You must honor him as you honor yourself, not only while you're learning together, but all day and all night. Otherwise, the relationship is not a profound spiritual one. And unfortunately, the members of the chavrusa are punishable by death for not internalizing the full value of what Torah means. If that's the case, we can suggest Rabbi Akiva's statement reflects the tragedy that he faced in his lifetime, losing 24,000 students in one shot. Teaches you the importance of learning Torah and value of the Torah you're learning and the catastrophic results of the failure to do so. Now let's turn to our other question. Why do we refrain from getting married during this period? So I always say there's no coincidences in the Gemara. The same page, Yevamah son of Bezim and Bez, the following statement is found. I'll read it to you in Hebrew because it's important that you know it. It's Hashem, you will be the beneficiary of it. Hope so, I pray for you. Ha'oev es ishto kegufo. One who loves his wife as he loves himself. Va'mechabda yoser migufo. And he honors his wife more than he honors himself. Wow. Such an individual is blessed with so many blessings. So many blessings. Yodata ki shalom ohalecha. You'll be blessed that your tent, your home, will be a place of peace. What's it doing on the same page? Okay, same page. Same page. Coincidence. There are no coincidences. And more than that. Vahav to l'reacha kamocha refers to every person, every Jewish person. L'reacha, or everybody. Why are you singling out the wife? Here's my answer. The command to love everyone exists. But to love someone else as yourself, this is limited to a deep spiritual relationship. We discussed it in the context of Rabbi Akiva's students. They didn't have it because they didn't appreciate the depth of their spiritual relationship and its value in studying Torah together day and night, and therefore they lacked in the kamocha aspect, kavod zeh v'zeh, literally as if you would honor yourself. Well, guess what? A man's relationship with his wife must be a spiritual one that reflects the ideals of Torah, demands that he love her as he loves himself, and honor her even more than he honors himself. You may ask, so why is he not required to love her more than he loves himself? I believe the answer is, that's not possible. Not possible. Love is in the heart primarily. Honor? It's in the pocketbook. The pocketbook comes in. You have X amount of money, and either you buy yourself a new suit, or you buy your wife a new dress. It's a no-brainer. Mechabda yosef migufo. The Gemara tells us in the Baba Kama, money mechabdusa. Clothes, honor the person. You have to honor her more than you honor yourself. That's how you will achieve shalom. You may just make a joke for a minute. I don't tell jokes, but this one is a good one. I heard it once at the Sheva Brachos, where the grandfather of the young lady was giving a series of interesting comments. He says to his new grandson-in-law, if you want to have shalom bayit, how do you do it? Very simply says, speaking of Sfaradit, shalom bayit. All right. Good joke. It's true. If you have the money, buy it. Make sure she buys it. That's all. This creates a level of shalom. Mechabda yosef migufo. That's exactly what the Gemara says in a non-joking way. Okay? If, unfortunately, the husband does not appreciate the full depth of the spiritual relationship that's supposed to be marriage, he's in for trouble. He's repeating the mistake of Rabbi Akiva's students. A different type of relationship, of course. That's a studying relationship. It's a marriage relationship. But they share something in common. their very deep spiritual relationships. Yes, we know marriage has a physical aspect to it as well. We don't belittle that. But the physical without the spiritual is animal-like. You need the spiritual aspect to affect every dimension of the marriage. If you don't have it, chas v'shalom, there'll be no peace. Now I'll tell you a chiddush. Everyone assumes that the reason we cannot get married during Sfira is because of avelus. Two questions. Number one, as I mentioned earlier in the Meiri, no other manifestation of avelus was practiced. Number two, someone who's in avelus is allowed to get married. Wait till after the Shiva, you get married. So how can Sfira, which is only a custom, be more severe than avelus proper? My suggestion is that the reason we don't get married is not because of avelus at all. This time of year is not a propitious time to enter into the most important spiritual relationship of your life, that of marriage. Because many years ago, the depth of a different spiritual relationship, the one-on-one charusa, kavod zeh bezeh, was not fully appreciated. And that's why we don't get married. This is a new interpretation. I can see it as what we call a chiddush. I never heard of anyone who will say it before me. Probably it's not exactly the simple interpretation. But nonetheless, it answers many questions. Let's just review part one of this year before we go to part two. So I think we had four questions. One, why 12,000 pairs? Two, how is it possible they didn't honor each other, basic level of honor of Akiva students? Three, why do we commemorate this tragedy so many years later, as opposed to other tragedies in the time of the Sfira? And four, why don't we get married in this time? Now we answered all four questions. It's not a general lack of honor. They had honor. They lacked a special honor, zeh bezeh, the 12,000 pairs one to another. That's the other 23,000 plus. That answers the first two questions right away. We then digress to discuss Rabbi Akiva's rule. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah after Lech Kamocha. The Chasam Sofer's interpretation, his question of the story of the canteen in the desert, the concept of the spiritual of Torah you must share completely. Apparently the students didn't do that. That's why they perished. That's why Rabbi Akiva made a statement, Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. Then we came back to discuss the idea found on the same page, Yevamos HaMakbeis HaMedbeis, about Oav Ishto Kegufa Mechabda Miyosu Migufo, is promised Shalom, etc. We explained, it's fundamentally the same deep lesson. You have to have profound spiritual relationships to demand the highest level of honor, not just the basic level, a higher, highest level. And it applied to the chavrusas of old, and it applies to marriage then and now. That's why you don't get married, not because of avelus, I'm suggesting, because an avel can get married, and there's no other avelus in the original manifestation, but because it's not a propitious time to get married because of the failure of Rabbi Akiva's students at this time of the year to fully appreciate what a deep spiritual relationship is, and therefore just wait another day. Any questions so far? This is my explanation. It's novel, I agree, and that's dangerous sometimes. But I figured you don't want to hear old stuff, you want to hear new stuff. This I don't think you'll find anywhere else, I don't think so. If you find it somewhere else, call me up. Let me know. Now we go to the Medrash. The Medrash tells a story in a slightly different form. The Medrash is found in Bereshis Rabbah, Samach Aleph, Gimel. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 disciples. You hear what's going on? Not 24, 12,000 total. All died the same period. Why? I'll give you the Hebrew. She'einehem tsara zebazeh. Literally, their eyes were narrow towards one another. What funny language is that? Narrow eyes? I give a translation. They looked grudgingly at one another. But the Medrash goes on. We might call it perhaps a somewhat more of a happy ending. Eventually, he raised 7 disciples. The Gemara has 5. The Medrash has 7. He said to them, Bonai, my sons, my dearest students, the previous ones died only because, listen carefully, Einayim Tzara Batorah. Presumably, they begrudged one another the knowledge of Torah. We'll explain in a moment. See to it that you don't act that way. They therefore arose and filled the whole of Eretz Yisrael with Torah. As we know, they're taught elsewhere in the Talmud, Rabbi Akiva's students were the ones who were the fundamental authors of the Mishnayos, and they brought Torah back. Famous names. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Yes, yes, I know Balag Bar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Etc. What does this mean? So the Mefarshim on the Medrash explain, if you grudge somebody, it demonstrates a lack of love. If you love someone, you're never jealous of him. Bakol odem miskane chutz mibeno v'tamidom, Chazal tell us. You have a child, who's jealous of a child? You want your child to be better than you. Because you love your child. Those who have proper relationship with their students want the same. Losisna esachicha bilvavecha. That comes before. V'ahavtarecha kamoch. Next post. Sehavtarecha kamoch. Now, Rabbi Akiva's students violated these prohibitions. Einayim tsara zebazeh. Their eyes were literally narrow. They didn't, there's an expression in Yiddish, fargin, now became a Hebrew word, the fargin. Anyone know what the word means? It comes from Yiddish. What it means is they begrudged another person. They bore a grudge against somebody else who had more than they had. And they're discussing now not money, more in Torah knowledge. Exactly the opposite of the Chasam Sofer said, you're required to share Torah knowledge with others equally. They wanted to hold it for themselves, that they should be the bigger Talmud Chacham. The other one, you know, maybe not as big. It's a terrible attitude. Reflects a lack of love for the other, can even lead to hatred of the other, and begrudging the other, and led to their untimely death. Indeed, if this is what caused their death, Einayim Tzara, then we are half to Lerecha Kamochas of Chagolah Batorah. Because if they would have had that love, it wouldn't have had that begrudging, they never would have died. Why do we use the expression Einayim Tzara? Narrow eyes. Narrow eyes. If you look with narrow eyes, like this, I'm squinting. Narrow eyes. You know what you see? You see somebody else's faults. That you can somehow see even with your narrow eyes. We'll zero in on the faults of others. Yes, unfortunately, a narrow look. And if you see the faults of somebody else, say, hey, why him? Why not me? That's called an ayin hara. We're supposed not to flaunt our wealth. The Torah Baba Basra da Beis, if you have a field which is successful, build a high fence. People shouldn't see. They see, they'll say to Hashem, why him and not me? And you know, Hashem hears that. And you say, yeah, that's a good question. Why him and not you? Take it away from you. Hide it. The Kliyakar says in Parshas Devarim, on the Pasuk, Pnu Lachem Tzafona, literally means go face north. This is geography. Does it mean something more than that? Tzafona Milashon Tzafon. You know what Tzafon, just a month ago exactly, we had the Seder. Tzafon means to hide the Afikoman. Hide your wealth. Goes back to Yaakov Avinu. We told his sons, Lama Tisra'u. Everyone else is starving, you have food. Don't let anybody know about it. Hide it. And the Kliyakar goes on to say that the majority of the problems that we have in Europe in his time, is the Talmud of the Maharal, lived 400 or 500 years ago. The problem is that we flaunt our wealth and our non-Jewish neighbors are jealous of us. That caused all of our problems. I'll add today, so are the Jewish neighbors. People feel an obligation to show off what they have, and yes, sorry to say, show off even what they don't have. Which leads to incurring debt, and sometimes even dishonesty. It's terrible. Your lifestyle should be modest. Don't flaunt your wealth. You look in Rashi, there's a fascinating Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Miketz. The famous dream of Paro. The fat cows and the skinny cows. Rashi there explains, remarkably, when a person's eyes are not narrow, not enayim tzara, people appear nice to one another. When you're hungry, you see all these skinny cows. When you're satiated, the cows look fat. When there's an abundance, people of eyes are not narrow towards one another. It explains the Mizrahi, this commentary on Rashi. Everyone looks nice. Seven cows are beautiful. Yosef understood it to me. 7 years of plenty. Most people, they have plenty. Okay. I forgive him. If I have a lot, he should have more. Okay, not so bad. But if I don't have, I begrudge every nickel that he has. The critical and perennial responsibility at all times. But you know, you would think that this kind of begrudging is limited to the financial world. Even there, it's not allowed. Ezu Ashir Hasameach Bechelko. If you're not happy with your lot, you will never, ever be happy. Ever. Could be, I spoke about this recently over here, about the Vilna Gaon's comment on Kol Yemei Ani Roim V'Tov Lev Mishneh Tamid. If a person is an Ani, means he's jealous of somebody else, all his days are bad. He can win a lottery. Lottery. Yeah, he wins a $1 million lottery. Yeah, but he won a $2 million lottery. You never have a good day. By contrast, V'tov Lev, he's happy for others as well. Mishneh Tamid, he's always partying, he's always happy. Someone else has more, so what? So you would think this whole idea is limited to the physical, financial world. Unfortunately, according to the Medrash, Rabbi Akiva's students begrudged one another in the spiritual Torah realm as well. And that's why he told his later students, don't you dare repeat their mistake. It led to doom and destruction. And when they made sure not to repeat the mistake, all of Eretz Yisrael filled with Torah. How do we get the Torah in the first place? Well, only a few of some Shavuos. That's the only way to receive the Torah. What is Shavuos called? You know what it's called? Atzeres. Atzeres. We all come together. Gathering. That's what it means. When his remaining students avoided grudging and achieved unity, then and only then could Torah be properly disseminated. You know, if you're jealous and grudge somebody else, it can lead to hatred of other people, and even chas v'chalila, to hatred of Hashem. I will read through the Sharei Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah, Shar Gimel, Kuf Samach, 160. He calls individuals Sonei Hashem if they act upon their thoughts and deter others from occupying themselves with Torah and with mitzvahs. Why should they stop somebody else? Ha! Because I want to be what's called miskabed b'klon chavero. I want to say I'm the top guy. If he is as good as me, I'm nobody. So I'll stop him. You know, unfortunately, I'm saying with pain, in some communities, there were people whose first name was Rabbi, who occupied pulpits, and when, for example, the yeshiva wanted to move into town, they stopped it, they wouldn't allow it. What? How can that be? Well, perhaps in some cases, the potential Rosh HaYeshiva, who had devoted himself completely to Torah study, as opposed to the community rabbi who was busy with other things as well, perhaps the Rosh HaYeshiva was a greater Talmud Chacham. And this guy wants to be number one in town. He can't let the yeshiva in. It's been known to happen in history. Too often, too frequently. You know, when Rabbi Aaron Kotler Zatzal came to these shores running away from the Nazis and he wanted to establish a yeshiva, many towns turned him down. He was such a towering giant. It was one wise, pious, righteous rabbi in a town called Lakewood, New Jersey. He said, come, come. Rav Kotler did not want to be in the middle of the city. He was a rabbi who let him come. I wish it was someone much closer. You know, I stopped going to weddings in Lakewood. It's too far away. And some rabbi half the distance of Lakewood would have invited him in. I would go. Same thing repeated in many places. That's not right to go into the negative, we'll talk about the positive. The same as Rabbeinu Yonah applies to those who are envious of the honor accorded honest, righteous Torah scholars and hate their crown of glory. Much more so when they seek to shame them or lower them. It'd be a terrible thing. And some as it comes to you want to elevate yourself. Miskabe b'klon chavero. Terrible. But great Torah leaders starting with Moshe Rabbeinu was exactly the opposite. A Rebbe should be happy when his students grow to the point that they no longer need him. They even exceed him. Moshe Rabbeinu was approached by Yoshua Gvalt. Eldar Umeidar Nistanu Bamachane. Moses' response. Miyitein V'chol am Hashem Nevi'im. Explains the Ramban. Let them all be prophets and bypass me. Get the Nevi'im straight from Hashem. Oh, but I'll lose my status. Gvaldik. I want to lose my status. Let everybody else have a direct line to Hashem and not require me to be an intermediary. That's true Torah greatness. Ish Moshe ono me'od mikol odom ashar pnei adama. He wasn't interested in promoting himself. Self-promotion is not a good thing. And I know that the world today is full of self-promotion. I'm fully aware of it. Frankly, I'm somewhat allergic to it. Thank God I've raised my children, I believe, to share that allergy with me. That's how it is. You know, Pilpul HaTorah was given only to Moshe Rabbeinu. A Gemara in Masechta Nedarim, Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Yes, it's true. Torah is Marash Kilas Yaakov. That's the Torah itself. But the Pilpul, you know, the Talmudic type of reasoning, back and forth, was given to Moshe and his children. Moshe Nohag Tovas Ayin, says the Gemara. The opposite of Tzaros Ayin. He gave it away. He gave it to all of Am Yisrael. The Maharsha explained, he shared the divine methodology with all of the people. They're independent. They don't need me and my children anymore. They can learn on their own. A Rebbe teaches a student how to understand Daf Gemara. Now you don't need the Rebbe anymore. Do it on your own. That's every good Rebbe's goal in life. Not to keep the students dependent on the Rebbe for the rest of their lives. We should view the honor accorded to Torah scholars with great favor. We're very excited that certain parts of the population, Torah scholars are given great honor. If I understand correctly, I just spoke yesterday in Citi Field. Was anyone there? The OU Torah in the city? Citi Field. It's not a Torah field. What is it? What does anyone know this? It's a baseball field. So what kind of cards do you have? When I grew up, we had baseball cards. Sure, baseball, the great baseball players. But in some parts of the world, they have Gedolim cards. People make fun a little bit. I don't. There's a song on A.B. Ruttenberg. Right? It's called the Joe DiMaggio card, something like that. It's a great song. Shmuel is one of the Gedolim. It shows a measure of honor accorded to great Torah scholars. And if in my house you don't have those cards, maybe it's a lack, shows a lack of appreciation for these great Torah scholars. You should be very happy. Generosity of spirit, that's the key. Others are being honored for their Torah. They have more Torah. They have great Torah. It's wonderful. It shouldn't bother us. We should rejoice. We should be happy. And perhaps we can elevate ourselves by looking up, not looking down. We know, as the says in Shulchan Aruch, we now have mourning in Sfira. Explains the Kaf HaChayim. We should distance ourselves from hatred, jealousy, desire, arrogance, and honor, and require love, humility, and peace. And he adds, it's especially true for those who learn Torah. Exactly. Exactly. Because if the original historical precedent which causes the mourning is the lack of it amongst Torah scholars, Those who study Torah have an additional obligation to learn the proper way to love one another. And finally, this Thursday is Lag BaOmer, a very happy day. You know why, says the Ma'aril? Because the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. Huh? You know why they stopped dying? Because they all died! That's a reason to celebrate. It's a reason for mourning. The last one of the 24,000 died right before Lag BaOmer. That's why we celebrate. You ever think about that question? You have an answer? It's a great question. The answer is, it's a Prichodosh. We celebrate the fact that the later students did not die. The five or seven, five in the Gemara, seven in the Medrash, did not die because they learned Rabbi Akiva's lesson to them, the most important lesson. Do not begrudge one another. Have great respect for one another. And if you want to rejoice properly on Lag BaOmer, how do you do it? Well, you stop singing and dancing and make bonfires. Come on. You have to recognize the lesson of Lag BaOmer. Not to be begrudge one another, spreading Torah. Indeed, this is exactly the lesson. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit over time. That clock is slow. I apologize. That's exactly the lesson Rabbi Akiva taught us. We should learn it well. Yahavta l'reacha kamocha ze klal gadol b'Torah. Thank you very much. You have questions?